Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Johnny.
And welcome to the show. This week we will review Lucky. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts and then we will go into a deep spoiler analysis. And I'm stumbling all over my words because I've been drinking a lot.
So. No worries. And it's not the drinking. Gentlemen, please don't get confused. We did not watch a Britney Spears music video, which was very as well. We watched a movie that came out in 2020 or 2021, depending on where you live, I guess. And not starring Harry Dean Stanton.
Don't watch that movie. I'm sure the movie's fine, but that's not related to what we watched. But first, we're going back to Retro TV Corner, and we're watching Amazing Stories, Mirror Mirror, Season 1, Episode 19. No.
Yep, Mirror Mirror.
Did I say that right? Mirror Mirror. 19, yes, I was right.
Sure, Mirror Mirror.
So, John, you picked this retro TV episode. Do you want to give us...
I did pick Murmur.
Murmur?
So, Murmur is actually something that I have been searching for quite some time. I'll say when I watched this, I was still in the single digits of life. And I'm talking about sexual partners. Just kidding. No, I was still, I was like, maybe I might have been like 10 or 11 when I saw this for the first time on television, and it scared the shit out of me. And I've been searching for this ever since. I mean, you know how you forget about things because you're like, I'm never going to fucking find this thing. And then it wasn't until recently, I'm reading a bunch of lists because, you know, we do our research outside of this because, yes, we do, folks. We are studious in the art of horror.
Yeah, we don't just turn the microphone on and drink a bunch and just let it go.
No, we have our phones that have Google open. So there, one of the lists I was reading through, I was like, holy shit, is this what I've been looking for the past, like, oh my God, wait, how old am I now? I'm not even going to mention that part. So for the past several passage of time, and it is exactly what I've been watching. And then it gets better because it's an Amazing Stories episode, which I had no idea. I love that series. So you know, Steven Spielberg wrote it, directed by Marty Scorsese, which he's making his television directorial debut with this.
I'm unfamiliar with that. Did he ever amount to anything or
no? I think he did like one mafia related movie possibly, but nothing else.
Mafia movies. Yeah. They're the worst.
Oh no. I think the only other thing he did that was like famous was a music video for, Michael Jordan.
Oh
yeah.
Yeah.
Called Eat It. I think. Actually, if anybody's unfamiliar, Marty Scorsese also directed the music video for Bad. And I think what people don't know is that there's like a 30-minute fucking intro to the music video before it starts.
Yeah,
it was a like short a whole film.
Thing.
So he directed this one.
And people also don't know, Martin Scorsese is one of my favorite directors of all time. Yeah. What people I'm surely don't know is that I directed a dramatic scene for my directing 2 class. Yeah. His first movie. I did that too. So I was playing dumb. right now. I'm very familiar with him.
Nardwar, if you need information about us when you interview us, Nardwar, yeah. The human serviette. Something I was unaware of was that Tim Robbins is in this fucking short, but I won't spoil that right away.
I read that.
I'm not going to spoil who he plays until we finish our review. But yeah.
So if people don't know, Steven Spielberg, his first kind of foray into TV was making this anthology series, Amazing Stories. And he just got like all his friends were just like the best of the best writers, best actors, you know, he just got
best director. Yeah. Everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. He primed it. He editors, just like,
yeah,
the best people he could possibly work with. He got him on this show, which is why which is why Marty probably did it. I'm sure they were friends and stuff like that.
And this is also a series. Like if we decided to just do another one of these, I have yet to watch an Amazing Stories that sucked.
Yeah. No, the first like run of Amazing Stories was really good. Apple Plus.
You told me this.
Brought it back. It ran for like one season. I don't know if it's coming back. It was okay. It wasn't amazing.
So yeah.
That was the only thing. Some of them were okay. There were some really good actors. There were some really good like stories, but nothing that like blew me away.
Which is amazing that you had to educate me on this because I had no idea that they brought the series back.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's like so much streaming services. And yeah. I think at the time I got it for free for like a year.
Oh, okay.
So I think I bought like a phone or something. They were just giving that thing away at one point.
Bought a phone?
I don't know if they're still doing that.
You know what really amazes me about television though? Creepshow keeps getting renewed.
So good point. So I think the reputation of anthology or TV was that it's somehow lesser or cheaper, but Steven Spielberg brought the A game. He brought like the best of the best of this series,
yeah,
which is why it came back. So
it almost like, but it was also during the era, like there was like a good little stint of the 80s where anthology or like, you know, episodic that wasn't a linear storyline sort of television shows were fucking amazing. Like I thought the revamp of the Twilight Zone was fantastic. Like it's a different flavor, but it's a great flavor. I love 80s and, you know, early 90s. Mm-hmm. Twilight Zone. And what was the other one called that was also Ray Bradbury?
Outer Limits.
No. Yeah. Like
Night Gallery.
No. Oh, Night Gallery also. You're right. Yeah. No, but Outer Limits also like the 80s version was really good.
Anthology series is one of my favorite type because you just get, you don't know what you're going to watch. Every episode's different and they always bring something different. So,
and if you watch like a feature film like Creepshow, then you're fucking hooked. It's like,
yeah, Creepshow is one of my favorite movies. Now that you've gone back to revisit Mirror Mirror, what did you think?
It is. You know, you get older, like I hate to say it, but like almost 30 years have passed, I guess. Maybe not 30 years, yeah. But like
86. So yeah, no, 30 years have passed.
And it's kind of amazing because, you know, you hope for the best because you understand things have like really progressed to a certain limit where it's like,
uh-oh.
The degree of film and quality has surpassed certain limitations that have happened in the past. And rewatching this, I was like, holy fuck, this is better than I remember. This is like, I loved it so fucking much. And it was like, it was perfectly simple and quick too. Like they didn't try it too hard to do. Like that's what I loved about Amazing Stories too. They weren't like shoving any sort of fucking exposition down your throat or anything like that. It's just like, hey, this is like a moment in somebody's life. There's a little bit of an explanation, but honestly, it doesn't matter because this guy's just like fighting for his life. Mr. Sam Waterston, who's like fucking brilliant. I loved it. Yeah. I don't know. What'd you think?
I thought you were going somewhere else with that, but it's very 80s. 80s TV. But, and I, Martin Scorsese, this is like, I know he has a fondness for horror movies. Look at like something like Shutter Island, right? That to me is his, that's in his wheelhouse of horror. That's, it's kind of a drama, kind of scary. This is more, I would say a little more traditionally made.
Yeah.
And I think the parts that work are when it's just focusing on setting up the creature or this figure. I don't even know what to call him.
Like the phantom creep or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know if he had a name or not.
Well, they didn't give him a name because it was just, he was the only person that could see it.
Phantom. He's listed as Phantom in the piece. So like all that leading up to it worked. And the mystery of it, I would have liked maybe like the whole design of everything that happens, all the action that happens in it, I thought was really cool. Like all the ways they found to to reflect off of. Because that's one of the things that it is, right? So Mirror Mirror is a story of a horror novelist who is sort of jaded, maybe even egotistical about writing horror, right? Kind of a knock on maybe a Stephen King type. Right. Like, kind of in that realm. And he's sort of jaded to the whole like process of writing and stuff like that. He does, nothing scares him, essentially. Right. So he ends up, I don't know, getting real, you know, comfortable and getting drawing a bubble bath for himself, relaxing bubble bath for himself, which is pretty fun. Because one note I thought was Sam Watterson's like in the smallest tub possible. He must be really tall.
He's a pretty tall guy.
I forgot to check, look at that, because I saw him laying in that small ass tub and I just felt his pain because, you know, I know what it's like to be tall and I'm quickly trying to look to see how tall he is.
6'1".
But he looked totally uncomfortable. I thought 6'1" in a fucking small ass tub. I felt that man's pain. But the sequences of him, like, so essentially he has like a mirror, right? You know, he sees this phantom-ish masked, I wouldn't say masked, but like hooded figure with the giant hat or whatever and reflecting in the mirror. And he's like trying to attack him.
He's trying to strangle him.
Right, he's going to attack him or something like that. Strangle him, so he, and they do really clever stuff like how he's able to see him, right? Because at first you think like the mirrors, and then I think they even do like glasses, shades, in the eyelids, anything that's reflective.
First time he kind of really sees him though is when he's drawing the bubble bath and he sees the reflection of the polished what do you call that thing? I'm calling it a spigot. It's not called a spigot. Oh my God, this John's an idiot. We use them all the time. We like wash our hands with them. Like
this faucet.
The faucet. Yeah, he sees the reflection of the faucet. Oh my God.
Okay.
We've been drinking.
Every little bits were super clever, and and Sam Watterson's so good in this part. Like he's just like selling that he's so terrified. He's never seen like that he's going to basically be murdered by this, you know, figure that nobody else can see. Right.
Yeah.
And I thought all of that stuff works. But I feel like the only thing is it has a really like TV ending. It's kind of like, let's end on a big ambiguous thing. And not, I was a little left wanting a little bit more, but I know that that's not kind of the point of it, right?
Yeah, because it's also, what did she see? Because you're assuming she's seeing what we see, and maybe she is to a degree. But then, again, they don't show after. So what happens is, like, the Phantom finally gets to him through, mm-hmm. like, after she comes in, and she was fantastic. She, like, covered all the reflective fucking parts of, sorry, I'm a burp station right now. Like, covered all the reflective stuff in his apartment or, like, super condo in what I could assume is supposed to be the Hollywood Hills. And
right.
It seems like everything's fine. He's had his eyes closed for a while. He finally opens them up to talk to her. And through the reflection of her fucking eyeballs, he sees the Phantom is right behind him and finally strangles him. And he's struggling and he's out of, like, her eye line and pops back up. And then he morphs into the Phantom and looks into the mirror. And he's like, obviously, like, the idea of grotesque. He's kind of like Phantom of the Opera sort of style, like grotesque. And
Uh-oh.
What happened?
Oh, I think I lost you there a bit.
Oh. Well, I thought it was me saying Phantom of the Opera because you're like, whoa!
Mind blown!
he looks in the mirror and he's like, and this is where, okay. A big actor reveal. It's Tim Robbins playing the Phantom. And yeah. He fucking, like, does such a great job of, like, fucking freaking out. Like, oh, shit. Oh, you know, like, he doesn't say anything. He's just like, ah. And then he jumps out the window, which that part was a little weird because, like, the way they choreographed it looked real kind of cheesy. He was, like, kind of, like, Superman style before he even breaks through the window. So, like, it's, like, this weird, almost impossible. Tim Robbins is, like, fucking 6'5 or something, I think. Like, I think he is 6'5". So 6'5" Tim Robbins is, like, horizontal in the air, which is, like, nearly impossible in most any building you've ever been in. You know, because ceilings are not that high. And he flies out the window, and then it just, like, is a zoom in on our main actress here, and she's just, like, horrified.
Yeah. And then it ends, yeah. It's kind of like one of those, like, he really was telling the truth. He wasn't crazy. He is the monster. Which I think is kind of, like, subtly what they're trying to say, that he...
That he is a monster, yeah.
It's kind of like, that he's kind of, like, not a great guy, right? He's kind of a dick. There's a scene early in the show, in the part of the show where, I guess, like, a fan of his shows up at his house.
Oh, yeah.
And he like completely, like, rightfully
so. Tells him off. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, he took some extra digs on him, I think. But I think that's kind of the intention.
Yeah. Because even the extra digs, because he was saying in that dialogue too, like, this is like what? Like, the, he was saying something like, the fourth time, the fifth time you've shown up at my blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah. I mean, maybe get a security guard guy.
Yeah, and he was just a fan and wanted him to read his work, so he kind of brushed him off. And he was also dismissive in the first scene when he was at the Cabot show. Yeah. Where he was kind of dismissive and didn't care that about the grotesqueness and the shock of what he was seeing. He just thought, oh, it's really cool. You didn't show this part where this, whatever happens. He did, right? Too. So he's like,
he did the whole, I agree with you with, like, yeah, maybe it's too much, but honestly, blah, 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 this, blah, 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 that. Right. Like, he had been through it before.
Right.
Like, he's
been
asked that question or he's been told that a billion times. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, I would definitely say not bad. Definitely interesting. Really cool. Didn't know about that. Didn't know that Martin Scorsese did this TV episode.
Yeah, but how upset would you be if you were 6'1", and then, I mean, if you were. So you are 6'1", right? And then 6'3".
6'3".
Yeah. And, you know, you become this grotesque thing, but you grew 2 inches. Because Timothy Francis Robbins... No last name. Born in West Covina, California, 6'5".
Well, nice. He represented all the tall people.
In West Covina, California.
Appreciate it. In West Covina. That's where Jimmy lives, isn't it?
No, is that maybe, where he decided? Maybe. You know, he's around there. Maybe Rosemead around the area. You know, could be in Pomona. You know, that sort of direction. That general part of drive-through towns. I shouldn't call them drive-through towns. They're not.
Yeah, you can't. No, there's nothing to get to them.
It's just, I mean, if you're trying to go to Orange County.
Why? Yeah. Why would you want to go to Orange?
Just kidding, Orange County folks that listen to us. We believe.
Put your mask on.
We believe
vaxxed.
In your politics.
But yeah, aside from that, excellent, excellent short. You had a lot of fun with it. I had a lot of fun with it. Definitely really cool. Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Look, surprisingly, and I want to say we did this on purpose, but the short and the film we're reviewing are similarly themed.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
We just did that. That's amazing. We're a year plus in and we're just like
in tune,
you know, in tune with our selection.
We're doing it.
So this week we are reviewing Lucky. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
Yes, I sure do. Because she's so lucky. She's a star, but she cries. I forgot the rest of the lyrics. Sorry, guys. Fuck Jamie Lynn. Free Britney. All right. No, she's already free, but good for her. I don't know if you're paying attention to the news, but Jamie Lynn is trying to do her last grab at a cash grab.
Oh, yeah. I read about it. Britney needs to be more free. More free than anybody that's ever been free.
I feel like, I don't know if it's on purpose, but it seems like it's timed because they found, I think Britney's got COVID now. She's real sick. So...
Just be free. Just be free.
All right. For Johnny's plot summary for Lucky, starring Brea Grant, directed by Natasha Kermani. Coming in at number 3, I have A Woke Groundhog's Day.
I like that one. Yep.
I'm going to do my bonus real quick. It is author works on self-defense.
With pun intended, yes. Right?
Coming in at number 2, I have for Lucky. Oh, no, this is a super nerdy one. This is Eugene Ionesco's A Groundhog's Day. So I was like, man, there's so much fucking here. It reminds me of Eugene Ionesco. If anybody's familiar, he's the guy that did Rhinoceros and... Oh my God, what's the famous one? I'm blanking. Anyway. And coming in for number 1 on Lucky. Suburbs don't give a fuck. So that's why... You shouldn't move to the suburbs because people can get murdered all the time and nobody gives a shit. They're like, oh, you know, it happens.
So
you're really like a woke
Lucky was that was a good one. I love it. That's nailed it. You could have just said that. I would have been like, yeah, that did it. That's because I've been kind of like wrestling with my thoughts about this movie because I get there's a lot of metaphor in this movie, and so I was trying to like find the right ways to say it, but that's I think you excellently explained what I was thinking. But this is written by Brea Grant, who of course did one of our faves, 12 Hour Shift. She's back. She wrote Lucky. John, what did you think?
I appreciate.
So So let me hold. Wait. So let me guess. Let me see.
Yeah.
The
yes.
woke part. So we're very progressive, you and I. But the woke part, I kind of get a little sense of eye yes, roll in
because
that. In that,
I felt like it wasn't executed fully. It wasn't fleshed out to a certain degree. Maybe this is. I mean, I don't want to downplay certain parts of it as a problem. It feels like a very privileged person's idea of what this whole scenario is. Even though they put people of color in it. damn. Like, I don't want to say the wrong thing here because it wasn't like I didn't hate the movie. It's not my favorite movie. Let's put it that way. Would I watch it again? Probably not.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know what to say. There was a lot of like, self-indulgent theater kid sort of vibes going on. Does that make sense? Like, you know, those. So every once in a while, when I have the time, I do go and try to do theater here in LA when I have the time. Most of the time, it's not even for like a full production. It's just to go do reads. And I still run into like some older, usually Caucasian person. Using usually loosely, it's always Caucasian person. Very adamant about like, okay. Oh, well, maybe I should just do this. Or, oh, you just don't understand. That's what I was getting from the way this was written, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like the idea was there. It was like, I truly appreciate what this was trying to do because it's true. It's not giving us any new information about this plight. Does that make sense? Like, it's not anything we aren't unaware of. Like, this is obviously what? Having to do with how difficult it is to be a woman in general, almost, I think, right? Because, it did a really good job of, like, other women coming in and also being the same type of, like, well, no, I'm already in this, like, man's idea of a world. So just, you don't understand. And then, even though people are hearing and repeating, they're not actually listening, which I really appreciated too. Oh, I had thought about this. Here's what I'll say about this. I think this would have been a fucking solid, awesome short. I don't think it works as a feature. There you go.
Okay. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
Okay.
It's, well, I think I liked it more than you. I actually am okay with the metaphor it's trying to convey. And it didn't hit me at first because the first time I had seen anything about this movie was just the trailer. It had an interesting setup, right? Like, it's basically just like the first part of this movie, right? That happens. And I of course, seen the trailer, I was like, it looks kind of interesting, has like a fun hook to it. And then I know Greg Rank wrote it. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Then let's pick it. I wanted to watch it. And then, of course, I started reading the reviews and all of them were negative. Shudder has like a little comment area and all of them were basically negative, which, and then I checked IMDb later in the week and I was like, all of them were mostly negative. And I was like, but, and this is before I watched it. I was like, okay, well, that's weird. I don't know what, you know, it made me second guess myself. I was like, well, I'm not sure if I picked something that's going to suck, right? I don't want to pick something, at least something that's kind of more thought provoking. But I actually found this movie to be pretty clever, pretty smart. There's a lot of little like warts
right.
to this story, right? And I totally understand what you're saying in terms of the message is not profound or unique, well, I guess.
I don't want to
say. And personally, I was underwhelmed by the ending, which we can get into spoilers. I was completely unsatisfied.
Could you also see a bunch of men being upset because at the end of this, it kind of feels like the true message was like all men are the problem. I mean, it looked like that.
Yes, but where I landed on it was more those things didn't occur to me. So I think this movie, and maybe it's just me being oblivious to it, right? It didn't occur to me when the cops aren't listening to her, when her friends aren't really listening to her, when her husband kind of disappears and reappears and stuff like that, that all of that was sort of could be looked at as a metaphor for women victims aren't always believed, right?
Which they feel alone that's totally true. And I'm not saying that I took away that all men are the problem at the end.
Right.
Because I think realistically what was trying to be conveyed was, especially if you've been through any sort of situation where, I don't want to get in, spoil anything, but like if you've been in any sort of situation where you feel like you're the problem, and then especially if you're a woman where like you're told that you're probably the problem, again, it doesn't matter who the other person is. It just, it's everyone. It feels that way.
No,
like everybody's against you. Yeah.
Where I latched onto this part of the movie was I really like that it's a play on a Telltale Heart. That's where I landed on it. Meaning it's her own guilt manifesting right. these scenarios. Because she admits later in the movie that she had kind of like, she cheated on her husband. Right.
Yeah.
And she had an affair, and that to me was like, okay, well then that explains what's happening. So let's go back in a little bit to the beginning, where essentially it's about a woman who is being stalked and or being stalked at night at home, and somebody's trying to break, basically a masked, faceless kind of guy trying to come in and kill her. Right, every night.
Right.
And
I feel like it's important to note that she's an author, because I think that's what one of the main driving points of the film is. Yeah.
Yes, that she's a writer and stuff like that, and she just wrote self-help book. Yeah. And so, it's important to note that like the name of her book is what "Go It Alone," right?
Yeah.
Kind of like using that phrase terminology as a way to be independent, and you know get away from, you could do it yourself, as a sort of a motivational thing for women.
Yeah. Which was like, I understand what you're saying, clever, because like, yeah, once her husband leaves, she's just always constantly calling him like, please come back, I need you, which is, you know,
right there's a lot of parallels to it, like and it kind of, I really like that it was subtle up until the last bit of it, right?
Yeah.
In my opinion, it was subtle. It was subtle enough to be like, I was more curious about what is this? Like, what's really happening? Why is this guy showing up every night, being murdered, disappearing, and then coming again every night? Why? What, you know, like you said, like a Groundhog Day scenario. And I was really curious about what the end result. So when they land on it being, I guess we're kind of dancing in spoilers already. when we kind of get to the end and it kind of reveals more and it expands on what the metaphor is, I was like, this is really good. I was like, man, that's really clever. And I'm going back and watching, going back and thinking over the events that followed. I was like, oh yeah, she is, you know, a woman in these scenarios and stuff like that. That where she isn't believed, that there are a lot of it's kind of hard to talk about, I guess, in society,
because like that whole section at the end is kind of important.
I guess we have to, because it's the whole theme of it, right? Like, so absolutely, yeah, let's get into
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers. So I started thinking that there was going to be a reveal that it's just another story, or like she's pitching her thing or whatever, but then that didn't happen. Because she wakes up in the parking garage again, and she keeps running into every other woman she knows being stalked by another sort of like masked person similar to the person she's being stalked by. And she runs into that her assistant? No, not her assistant. Yeah, her assistant.
Her friend assistant? Friend slash assistant? Yeah.
And she tells her like, oh, just come with me. And she's like, well, no, we're here. We need to help all these other people because there's a bunch of other women being stalked by the same sort of style of person. And she's like, no, this is just the way things are. Like, it doesn't matter. Just like, come with me. So she had the opportunity, even though she was able to see that, she had some sort of clout to stop it. She didn't do it. So it's just like talking about there are other women like this that do that because they feel like they hit a certain point instead of helping others. And then they get fucked in the end, too. It's like, that's so like these things were interesting, like I said, but I felt like it was maybe 30 minutes too long. I don't
know. No, I agree. It definitely felt, it felt like a good idea expanded upon, maybe too expanded upon. And unfortunately, I think, I wasn't a big fan of all the other actors in this movie, like Bria Grant, yeah, I think she's fan-fucking-tastic. She's like in every scene in this movie, and I liked pretty much, she carried the entire movie for me. Like, I was invested in what she was doing. I thought she had some nice, subtle stuff, some bigger stuff. She actually did a really good job, I think, of blending kind of absurdity of the situation, kind of comedy moments with horror. With the horror moments, I think there was a nice,
but it also feels like,
you know,
like a balance direction wise, it feels like everybody else was asked to play things kind of flat.
Right. And I guess that was the intention, to kind of sell you on this bigger concept.
Yeah, I think so too, but
of this,
I don't know
sort
if it worked. Like, I think you're saying the same thing. I don't know if it worked. Yeah.
I don't think it completely worked either. I wasn't sold on some of the acting on this movie, and even a little some of the writing's not so high. It's a tough one, but I don't like calling movies low budget. but this one, I don't like saying that, but it did feel a little small. If that makes
and also
sense.
I feel like asking everybody to kind of play things a little bit flat, because that's where I got the Eugene Ionesco thing, because it felt very like a play, that sort of theatrical almost. And I was like, this husband guy actor, he's like super handsome, but I was like, it feels like they only cast him because he was handsome, because I thought his acting sucked until I saw that everybody else in the movie was also acting sort of flat too on purpose. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, right. And maybe because this is Natasha's second movie, I hate saying stuff like that, but the more experienced director could have maybe rounded those performances a little better, fleshed them out a little better. And I actually think it's visually a little bit of a little bit boring, shot movie.
I don't know if they're trying to get like the feel of the Burbs, but like it's like,
I think those certain elements worked against it. But I really like that there's a lot of really good ideas here. Really good ideas. Interesting concept. That got expanded upon, that more or less tracks to the end. And, you know, I kind of like that she kind of plays a character, and we slowly reveal that she's not really a victim. She kind of plays a character that wouldn't, like you said, wouldn't save another woman's life.
Because every time they would bring up her husband, like, oh, yeah, he left. Oh, is this normal? And she's like, yeah, he's done it before. So they keep trying to lead up to, like, oh, he hit her at some point. And then she's like, no, he's never done that before at all. Like, I was the problem.
I think it's we have to note that some of the if anybody takes notice of some of the acting, it's done on purpose. I think that's it's done in a way to convey the strangeness and the peculiarness of what's going on, to create this surrealism that's happening.
Because it did feel like, oh, I thought we were going to get like some sort of, I don't want to say Inception, that's the wrong idea, but like I thought it was just going to be like, oh, this is another story being told because of how surreal everything was. But then it kind of ends like this is actually happening, and it's like, well, that's okay. I mean,
okay, so yeah, the ending. So she faces the maskless guy again, who I kind of thought they were going to identify him as the man she cheated with her husband, but I don't think they ever did.
I mean,
I thought they were going with it.
But, you know, because of what's revealed.
He's really handsome, man. I'm just kidding.
But yeah, this is like the upteenth time that she's killed him, right?
Right.
Because the dude keeps getting killed and disappearing.
Uh-huh. And she... eventually, again, she knocks him down and... I don't know if it was visually, I don't know if you caught these like visual cues in the movie, that anytime they were together, because there was maybe two instances where she was able, or three actually maybe, where she was able to knock them down and they were laying together and they laid similarly but opposite of each other. They laid almost similarly, one hand over the arm, just as she did. So she was mirroring the guy. So I thought there was like some parallel there between them. But I don't know if they didn't really make much of it. And so again, at the end.
No, yeah. Kind of also with the ultimate, I guess, like murder weapon. There's like a shard of glass that was just there randomly for no reason on the coffee table.
Right.
And then like they kept mentioning like, oh, that would be dangerous in the wrong hands or whatever. And then she finally uses that, but then it doesn't seem to matter. Like it was like, oh, okay. Like that's I'm not sure what the symbolic point in that was, but
that one left me a little more puzzled too. Like she ends up stabbing him and she finally takes the mask off and it's just like this morphs of a lot of men's faces, but like it never settles.
Everyone she's ever met. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she never really settles on one. And then she kills him again. Right. And then that it ends. And I was left feeling like I think that's the one.
Oh, so I did rewatch it. I rewatched the ending a couple of times because I was like, I feel like I'm missing something. So when she finally stabs him again, then that's when she takes the mask off and she's just kind of staring at his face. And then she gets frustrated more than anything else. And as like the faces morph, and I'm pretty sure it's like along with a couple of actors you've seen throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much every man she's ever run into. That figure or whatever starts to actually look at her and then smiles. And I'm assuming when it cuts back to her and she gets frustrated, I'm guessing that he disappears again is the idea.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's a good reading on it. Yeah. And then it kind of just ends. So, leaving you thinking that this is going to happen again. And somehow this world is like this now, where women are being basically murdered, right? Like taking it almost literal now. Now we're in a literal place. And when we were, I feel like we were all in metaphor before leading up to it. Right. And I think that confused me. That's where it lost me. I was like, oh, that's not, I could see why it's like zero stars. This guy, all these people, because it's like, I don't know. I was left a little cold with the ending.
I wish there was more of... I wish it would show the masked man disappearing again. I wish they showed her just going full out frustrated. Probably would be a better ending in my head, I think. Instead of just her laying there on the ground. Like, I understand it's supposed to be a sense of helplessness, but...
I don't want anybody to think that I'm trying to, like, I need resolution. I need to know exactly what it was and what its history is. I don't need that. But I do need to feel like the metaphor they're bringing up and over again, and it comes back again at the end to kind of resolve it in some way. And yeah. I felt like I didn't feel like it, there was enough there to feel, for me to feel satisfied with it. So I just wanted to make that point. I feel like she mixed it too much, like the metaphor and the reality of the situation. So I don't know. It just kind of leaves it like, oh, it's a mind fuck. It's the he turns into the Phantom and jumps out the window. If you want to bring it full circle, but that's kind of how I felt like it. It's a hard thing to write and then come up with a great ending's hard, I think, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And I think Brea Grant is a really interesting horror writer. An actress, watching her on Heroes and stuff like that and seeing how she's progressed and she's becoming like this really strong voice in horror is a turn I didn't see coming.
And she's around our age. No, that's good. She's doing really well for herself because she just had her 25th birthday.
Like us. 23. Cool. Did you have any last thoughts, John?
No. Damn, like I said, it was like a great, it would have been like a great episodic sort of entry into like if it was as long as Mirror, I think it would have been fantastic.
Yeah, I get that. Totally get that. Cool. Yeah. All right. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
Don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give Lucky 5 sexy spooky bones.
Nice. I think I liked it more than you.
Yeah.
So, I also think I got, I got different things out of it. More things worked on me, I think. I'm going to go 7. 7 out of 10 sexy spooky bones. Go.
Nice. So I highly recommend watching Mirror Mirror.
I was waiting for you to say something. All right, guys and gals and non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky!
Skeleton crew, it's time. The boys say goodbye. We love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to go.